we'll go ahead and read 25:5-10. So I guess we'll just take one verse at a time, and I'll go ahead and start with 25:5, and then Hal, we'll just go you and Greg and Jenny. So Genesis 25:5. Abraham left everything he owned to Isaac.
But while he was still living, he gave gifts to the sons of his concubines and sent them away from his son Isaac to the land of the east.
Although Abraham lived 175 years.
Then Abraham breathed his last and died at a good old age, an old man and full of years, and he was gathered to his people.
His sons, Isaac and Ishmael, buried him in the cave of Machpelah near Mamre in the field of Ephron, son of Zohar the Hittite.
And Jack, you want to take...
The field Abraham had bought from the Hittites, there was buried with his wife Sarah.
Okay, very good. So, question one then, to whom did Abraham leave everything he owned?
What page are we on that?
We're on the top of four.
Yep.
Last half.
Got it? All right, so again, the answer to number one, to whom did Abraham leave everything he owned?
Isaac.
Okay. And then what did Abraham do for the sons of his concubines?
Gave them gifts and sent them away.
Mm-hmm. And then who buried Abraham? Mm-hmm. And then again, to fulfill the covenant that he had with God, what is the significance about the place where Abraham was buried?
It's the same place that he bought for to bury Sarah.
Mm-hmm. And what land? Again, to fulfill the covenant, he was buried in what land?
The Hittites.
Yeah, or Canaan.
Canaan.
Yep. Good. So, just a few comments again. As we've been studying Abraham, his life's now ended, but to we see the prophecies and the covenant that God had with Abraham being fulfilled even at his death and after his death. So let's move on to a discussion point here. His word in my life. She's never had any children of her own. Her nieces and nephews have become her children, and their children have in turn become her grandchildren. Her good cooking was surpassed only by her faith, and her family was always nourished spiritually and physically whenever she visited them. Now she is terminally ill and has only a few months to live. Some of her grandchildren want her to live it up in the time remaining. Where do you want to go? What do you want to do? They ask. We'll arrange it for you, anything you want. But her response always was, no, I'm content to stay right here. I've got my Bible to read and my family and friends to visit me. I don't need anything else. Are the grandchildren wrong to suggest that she live it up? What might Abraham have advised her to do? What light do the following passages shed on this? So let's look these passages up, and then we'll go ahead and come back to the question. So somebody want to take Philippians? Someone take 2 Corinthians?
I'll take 2 Corinthians.
And then someone else take 1 Corinthians? So Philippians chapter 1, verse 21 and 23.
I got it.
Okay.
For to me, to live is Christ and to die is gain. And then verse 23, I am torn between the two. I desire to depart and be with Christ, which is better by far.
Okay, good. And then 2 Corinthians 5, verse 8.
We are confident, I say, and would prefer to be away from the body and at home with the Lord.
Okay, and then 1 Corinthians 7:31.
Those who use the things of the world as if not engrossed in them, for this world in its present form is passing away.
Okay, so getting back to the questions, are the grandchildren wrong, number one, to suggest that she live it up? What might Abraham have advised her to do? And what light do the following passages shed on this?
I would say that they weren't wrong in doing that as long as it was within the realm of right and wrong. Mm-hmm. Live it up tends to mean something not too good.
Yeah. I think they had loving intentions.
But they had the right to offer to do things for her. Anyway, mm-hmm. She declined, so she didn't want it anyway.
It sounds like they were pressuring her, though.
That probably.
I think that's wrong.
Mm-hmm. I don't think they understood what contentment meant to her. Mm-hmm. Or she had such an appreciation for it, and they had such an appreciation for her. I think they did it because they loved her so much, but...
Perhaps
I think she had her mind
stuff.
On her heavenly home because it was going to mm-hmm. be so beautiful. So taking a trip,
yeah,
I'd rather be.
And perhaps they
family.
Had known that she hadn't taken trips in her life.
Yeah,
and they wanted to give her this last chance.
Yeah, yeah.
But like you said, they weren't focusing on what she was focusing on.
Yeah, exactly.
They were thinking that she was unhappy and she really wasn't. She was
right.
content in where she was. So
and nothing's better than being content.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what do you think, if Abraham were speaking to her, what do you think Abraham would have advised her to do?
Well, she chose what was important. She said, I have my Bible and my family and friends.
She was living her godly life.
I think he would have said, she's content, leave her be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think, well, you know, when we... read these passages and say, okay, we're talking about someone that's terminally ill. You know, whether you're a child, whether you're a teenager, whether you're in your 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, or older, I mean, this applies to all of us. I mean, we all can get engrossed in the things of the world. And, you know, sometimes... we all have to stop and say, okay, I have a choice here. Do I really need to do this? It gets back to the wants versus the needs. It doesn't mean that what God gives us or provides to us or gives us an opportunity to do here on earth is wrong.
It's how you use it.
It's how you use it, yeah. Or anything can taken to an extreme.
I think Jenny, too, kind of make the connection to Abraham always had in mind... the promised land, the land that was promised to him, and you know she has in mind the promised land of heaven in her mind, clearly.
I think she shows a good example.
Continually blessing them with her spiritual gifts,
mm-hmm.
because mm-hmm. they said earlier that she had nourished them both spiritually and physically.
Mm-hmm. And her answer to me is that like a gentle reminder to them of what is really important.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
I think that when you get to be my age, you say just be quiet and sit still.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a good point. Along the way, you know, it says that she always nourished them spiritually and physically, and, you know, even at the end, so to speak, with only a few months to live, she was still going down that path. And you know, when you wonder when those situations do come up in life, and those around an individual that has a strong Christian faith, you know, you just wonder. Even at that stage, how the Holy Spirit's working in other individuals, when someone's confronted with this, and in the midst of it, has just a strong faith. It goes back to that gratitude talk that we went to where the guy was had MS or something, and he wrote down some words for his family, and he started off, life isn't fair, and your mind was going, oh boy, he's going to go down this path, and he exactly went the other way. He was just grateful for all the good things that had happened in his life, rather than saying, oh poor me, or why me, or... Any other comments? Okay, good. So Abraham died in peace, just as he had lived. God's promises had sustained him in life. They had prompted him to put his life into God's hands and obey his will, and they had sustained him in death. Can there be a more blessed life? By faith in God's promises, that life is yours always. So the summary, there is a calmness that comes from knowing that all sins are forgiven because of Jesus' sacrifice. There is a peacefulness that comes from knowing that our Heavenly Father is in control of all the nations, rulers, and events of this world, and that nothing can happen unless it serves his purposes for his kingdom of grace. There is a contentedness that comes from knowing that Jesus came back physically from the death, that he is alive and present in our world today, and that because he lives, resurrection from the dead to life in heaven awaits all who believe in him. It is that calm contentedness of faith that makes it possible to deal with death, that motivates people to strive to do the Lord's will, and that puts everything into perspective at the end of life. May Abraham's example of faith and life be a continual source of strength and encouragement to you. Along the lines of this last lesson, there was an option in here in the lesson to have a discussion around this point that's brought up by the author, and it's agree or disagree. Unless people have the opportunity to realize their dreams, they really haven't lived. So again, agree or disagree. Unless people have the opportunity to realize their dreams, they really haven't lived. So if you think back in the context of Abraham's life and what we've studied about Abraham, the author is setting something up for a discussion in that light. So one more time, agree or disagree. Unless people have the opportunity to realize their dreams, they really haven't lived.
Disagree.
Okay. And any comments in regard to the disagree?
Well, dreams are just that. They're things that you might like to do, but don't necessarily ever accomplish it. They don't come true, so be it. That's what it's meant to be.
Well, I think that we have to remember that we don't do our will, we do the Lord's will.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And he may have something better in mind, a better dream, a better outcome.
Abraham lived a lot of years and probably always wondered about that promise that God gave him, which was not fulfilled until many, 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 many years later. And, you know, that he must have always been looking forward to that and never had the opportunity to see it. And you know, but yet he lived a very full life in God and never forgetting that, you know, that dream, so to speak, but and always looking forward to it, but not, you know,
but would you
call
that
about less of his life because it was not in his lifetime.
Would you call that a dream, though? That was a promise from God. Wasn't
but,
really a dream.
But don't you think it's was something he wanted? Yeah.
Oh, it's something he wanted. The
oh, that's what a dream is. Something
but I don't
want.
I don't know if I'd consider that a dream or not.
I think he probably was always wondering whether that was going to happen during his lifetime.
He might have dreamed about it, but anyway, that's neither.
Well, I guess you could also say, you know, it says unless people have the opportunity to realize their dreams, they haven't really lived. You know, and what's the, I guess it's how the world defines living or life versus, you know, God and the Bible and what He says, you know, our life should be. I mean, definitely He created this earth for us to enjoy. But it gets back to what Jenny said, everything in moderation. You know, I suppose at different stages of our lives, we all question, you know, am I doing what I'm really supposed to do? Or, you know, I wish I would have done that when I was 18. Or I wonder if I would have done this way instead of that way. I think the comfort in that is you can always come back to, you know, God is going to take care of me and provide for me in this short temporal life that I have here. And I really need to do God's will to the best of my ability in this sinful body that I'm in, and be content and be satisfied. Doesn't mean to be lazy or sit back and, you know, wait for something to come. But again, the perspective from a Christian's standpoint versus an unbeliever, completely different. You know, the almighty dollar driving versus the almighty, you know, driving my life or guiding me.
There's a Bible verse, because I have it in our bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
So we put special ones in there. And it's, I don't remember what book it's in, but it's like, I have found contentment in any and every situation that I'm put in. And I think that's good. You know, it just kind of, because it's not about us. It wasn't about Abraham. Oh, but God used Abraham. He was a very special person. But it's not about Abraham.
I keep thinking we could take that statement that the author put down with just a couple changes, make it something that we'd all agree with.
Yeah.
That would have something to the fact that if you haven't learned about your Lord, you haven't lived.
Yeah.
You know, if you haven't come to faith, you haven't lived.
Well, there's two definitions of dream. You dream when you're sleeping. And there's another dream that you have in your mind that you continually dream about what you want to do in the future or whatever. To me, that's two different things. And I don't know which one they're talking about here in this.
I think we're talking about
a desire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think,
yeah,
because you can't control
a daily
the dreams that you have during the night.
Right, yeah.
While you're sleeping. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's that earthly life driven by our sinful nature being, you know, those dreams versus, you know, God's will for us. I found it, Jenny. It's Philippians 4, verse 10 and 11. I rejoice greatly in the Lord that at last you have renewed your concern for me. Indeed, you have been concerned, but you had no opportunity to show it. That's the preceding verse. Here's the verse, Philippians 4, 11. I am not saying this because I am in need, for I have learned to be content, whatever the circumstances.
Yeah.
I think when I was in college and I was getting my degree in ag business, but I was also playing college football. You know, there's always in the back of your head that dream. Oh, well, be good enough to play pro football.
Right.
But, you know, you got a bunch of guys that are good in high school and the top rises and then they go to college football. Well, then all of a sudden you're average again, you know, and then the top rises and then you go to the pros. And, you know, I mean, there's that dream that everybody has at one point in their time about something. But, you know, you got to be realistic with yourself, and the path takes you another way and you go that way, and such is life. I mean, I had buddies after I graduated. I had a job for 5 years and they were still working out, trying to break into the pros. And the odds are so against you. And then when you make it, the average career in the NFL is 2.5 years.
Lifespan.
2.5 years. You know, a lot of guys don't make it in their first month. They get hurt or they're just not good enough. They get cut.
I think back to the little kids, you ask them, you know, what they want to be. And the boys, it's, you know, basketball, baseball, football, and everything, that they're going to be pro. And you hate to take away those dreams, mm-hmm. but you know that the chances are next to none that any of them are going to get there.
Yeah. And you get kids in high school.
Oh, yeah. That's, yeah.
They see that and they're pretty good. And
I never had to worry about that.
I can relate to that.
And it just, it doesn't have to be sports. It can be, you know, it can be anything.
Yeah.
I think even when you look back, you know, like you said, you look back and you say, oh, well, maybe if I would have done that, or maybe I should have made that choice or whatever. And I think, you know, you have to try to see, because God will use even our wrong choices to work something out.
Mm-hmm.
For our lives, if we're connected to Him. And so, you know, sometimes you have to, like, you know, you can say, well, you chose, you know, your job or whatever in ag business, and God blessed that. God used that. You know, and so any choice that we make, even if it wasn't necessarily the right choice, God can use.
God can turn work into good.
Because mm-hmm. our ultimate, I heard this on the radio from a Jewish man who loves Christians. He said our ultimate goal, I know, it sounds weird. Our ultimate goal here is to be disciples. So if you're a stay-at-home mom, if you're a garbage man, wherever you are, all your real job is to plant the seed, you know, toss it out there, and let the Holy Spirit do its thing. That's all our job really is, bottom line, you know. And if you're blessed with children, to teach them to do it so the generations go on and on and on. So if you think of it in terms like that, which is actually what the woman in here did, Hakuna Matata, you know, we've done it. We're doing it.
Well, I told Pastor, the conversation was really good last week for Stewardship Sunday in there. I don't know how many of you were in there, but I had to sneak out at the end. I wanted to make a comment, but I caught him later on. It was really making me think about, you know, no matter how little you have or how much you have in life, I was thinking, when you're sick, I mean, think back to when you were really sick, and you're laying in bed, and you're throwing up or whatever, and you just feel terrible. It doesn't matter how poor you are or how rich you are. All you want right then and there is to feel better.
Yeah.
But I mean, it just kind of was putting things in perspective for me. You know, no matter how, you know, how good you have it or how, I mean, it just says that riches don't necessarily equate to happiness.
You know, bare minimum.
Yeah. And then there was a study I saw. It was a little documentary, and they... On PBS, and they did a deal on happiness, and they were interviewing people in America, and all the way to the other spectrum, third world countries, and they found that in third world countries, happiness was at a much higher level, and they have nothing, if you really look at it in comparison to us, including indoor plumbing or running water or electricity. I mean, it's hard. You know, we get so like this in the U.S., and I think it was brought up, you know, the large majority of the world doesn't even have indoor plumbing, electricity, running water, isn't it? But we don't stop and think about that.
Well, and how often I've read and heard, you know, maybe it's a new couple or whatever, that the years that they had to really struggle, you know, to barely make ends meet. They had this itty-bitty little place that, you know, it was by no means what they were hoping for. That's when they were the happiest, when they were struggling the hardest.
Pastor Waterstrat told me that the pastors, missionaries that he's talked to that go out there into those third world countries say that it's harder to come back and get back into the craziness here than it was to go over there and deal with less.
I remember when the Holands came back, mm-hmm. from when they went to Czechoslovakia, and then they came back, and I remember Cindy saying, because while they were there, you don't have choices. I mean, you don't, you know, you go to the store and you get what's available. You don't like have these choices, you know. So then when they came back, she said she went to, I don't know, Target or whatever it was, you know, and she was going to buy shampoo. And she was just overwhelmed because there's like aisles and aisles of shampoo. And it's like, okay, which one should I get?
Yeah, you know, each one promising.
It, you know, and she said it just hit her that when they were in Czechoslovakia, there weren't these choices. And things were just easier because there were not these choices.
All you need is a roof over your head, food on the table, and some type of clothing and shoes. That's what those people focus on, and just being safe. We're here, we're focused on, well, gosh, the Joneses got a 5,000 square foot house, and mine's only 3,200 square feet, you know?
I don't know that we even think about it like that, comparing, but we're always striving for more, mm-hmm. you know, or even now to maintain.
Yes.
It's hard to maintain even what we have at this mm-hmm. point. And, you know, it's
you know, things have gone bad when people are camping out 2 days ahead of time for Black Fridays.
Yeah.
And they still don't get the stuff because there were people who got there ahead of them.
Yeah.
I know. Well, you know, it's funny. I was hearing the radio, some of the radio and news announcements, and you know, they're sticking a mic in people's faces after they had waited 20 hours or 12 hours or whatever. So, was it worth it? Did you get the deal? No, I was disappointed at, well, I mean, what did they really think? Did they really think they were going to get something for nothing? I mean...
The sad thing is, because I don't know, I either heard or read something, like back in the 50s, you know, you thought it was hard then, but nowadays, whether you want to or not, because I don't want to, you kind of have to have a computer, and you almost have to have a cell phone. It's almost like the technology is so out there that you have to be in it, whether you want to or not.
It's so time consuming.
Yeah, it's supposed to make our lives easier. Yeah.
Look at Morgan, the journalism program.
Yeah.
Her going into her sophomore year at University of Missouri, they had to get an iPhone. It was a requirement of the journalism program. They had to keep them in touch with the things that they were going to be doing in their classes. And I mean, I was like...
Well, they were making money. iPhone was paying them then. They were, you know, it all comes mm-hmm. down to the yep. almighty dollar.
Yeah.
Well, it's...
Extra
but it's
$30
the same
a
way
month
at the
just
seminary.
To keep that iPhone going.
Even at the seminary when Kevin... Well, he knew ahead of time, but you had to have a laptop. You absolutely... You couldn't just have a computer in your room. You had to have a laptop. And you know, so
it's everywhere.
Just
a telephone.
Interesting.
You do the internet and all kinds of applications on the phone.
Hmm. And I'm sure they subsidized folks that struggled with probably getting them. I don't know. But you'd think guys coming out of MLC would probably already have one. I don't know.
Well, Kevin only had, you know, his
desktop.
Yeah. And so that was something he had to get before he went to SEM. But, yeah, I mean, and a lot of what they do at the seminary now is all on
computer
on programs that are, they have to buy all these computer programs, you know, to do their studies.
Interesting.
Which is, I mean, you know how you used to study Luther out of Luther's books?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
The big old books? Yeah. And now they do it all with these programs.
I was going to say
the
programs take a lot less space.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah. Less
but
trouble.
If your computer crashes, you're in trouble.
But
you
can
still
be
grabbed off
for them because they don't have to go to the library.
Right,
mm-hmm.
right.
You know,
right.
Less
Luther's
trouble for a teacher,
and,
too.
Yeah.
There is no teacher. Well, in the end, there probably is.
Yeah.
Well, I was on the airplane the last few weeks, and a guy across the aisle had one that was about this size, maybe about the size of this Bible.
It was a book
that, you know, where you can have 150 books on it.
That's what Trish does, the Kindle.
And he was reading a book on it, and I'm like,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, Trish, I think the first time I saw one of those, Trish had it at choir one night about a year ago. In the world is that? Sure enough,
well, we get this. This is what blows me away, how much we spend in this country. I mean, I know we're in debt, but it's so fixable. It really is. If we would just have collective discipline, it is really fixable. But who wants to give up? Well, I'm not, what, you want me to give up something? Well, is Hal going to give it up too? You know, if Hal gives it, is Greg going to give it? You know, how much do you think the food, snack, chip, market is in the United States annually?
Billions.
$7 billion. We were watching this show on TV. $7 billion. And I mean, who would have thought? Well, so do I. So do I. But you know, you stop and
the Oreo people.
You know, but you stop and go, man, if everybody just took $5 a week and didn't do that on just, you know.
But when they spend it on something else, then.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is if collectively, of course, yeah, then all the potato chip companies would be going under. But but the point is there's, it boggles my mind how much money's out there.
Yeah. There was on TV the other day, I think it was Dr. Phil, had this person on there who was addicted to coffee, and he figured it out. She spent almost $5,000 a year just on coffee. Just coffee.
Well, yeah. Look at, what did they pay when they go to Starbucks?
4 to 6 cups a day. Oh, yeah. Everywhere she went, she had to get a cup of coffee.
Well, that's just it. Everywhere she went, it wasn't that she was buying it and having it at home a thermos.
She wasn't buying it at McDonald's for whatever. She was buying it at like $2
Starbucks.
And a half
yeah.
a whack, you know.
Yeah.
And everywhere she went, she had to have this cup of coffee.
Well, I was really, when we were confronted a few months ago with, and you know, it's perpetual. We're never going to be out of debt, but when our congregation was confronted with that big 60, 70, 80,000 deficit, whatever it was, you know, everybody stepped up, some a little, some a lot, but the point is that we were able to get through that. Now, is it going to happen again? Probably, most likely, but you know, when you really work together, particularly for an ultimate good reason, you know, it was nice to see that the congregation came through with that, and that, you know, we are going to be confronted with hardships, and it's nice to, you know, Greg stepping up for that, you know, those families, and yeah. I mean, for our congregation to help them is going to be nothing,
right.
Really, and it's nice that he put that offer to help out there in front of the congregation, so. But we are blessed, and you know, the minute we get in our cars and drive off the lot today, boom, we'll be slapped right between the eyes with some other temptation of, you know, it's nice to always be able to have a church home, you know, a church family, and something to lean on other than this world. Like I've said many times, I don't know how I'd get through some of the stuff. You know, just the stuff that you have in life as a non-Christian. I just don't know how people do it. So, well, I know I wasn't here consistently, and I had fill-ins, but I appreciate, and I told Jenny this many times, I appreciate the interaction that this class had, and this, you know, that it wasn't a quiet room. Everybody was always willing to participate and give feedback and interaction, their own ideas, and I think you know, I think that's where it's valuable, where we can look into God's Word and pull things out of here that are still very applicable to our lives today in this day and age. And this just isn't some ancient book that doesn't mean anything. So I thank all of you for that and your attentiveness and input. So. So we're done. We're out 15 minutes early. Remember when you were a kid in school and you got out early for something? It was always great.